All right, everyone, welcome to the Sports Gambling Podcast, Week 8 edition. I'm your host, Sean, making the money green with my co-host here in picks, my partner in picks, Ryan, Mad Dog Kramer. Ryan, how's it going, man?
I feel like I should be making the money, Kramer. You should be Mad Dog Sean Green.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Or Raging Sean Raging Green.
The Raging Cajun Sean Green?
I don't know.
I'm Irish, though. I don't think that works.
I just feel like I'm making the money.
Yeah? How have you been doing so far in gambling?
I know this isn't really the topic, but I actually went through to see how I've been doing. I've won on NFL. I've done all right. I'm not down money, which is good. But on college this year, I've only had one losing weekend. And I'm up, you know, 20 units, we'll say.
All right, 20 units. That's a good number to be up. What have you attributed your college gambling to success?
I've been smart this year. I've stayed within the I try to only bet on the conferences I know. So,
and what conferences you know right now?
Pac-12. Living in Los Angeles, you're forced to watch a lot of Pac-12 football. So Pac-12. I'm a Virginia Tech fan. So ACC and then SEC. A lot of national games. So I try to stick to those three conferences. And sometimes I'll sneak out and do a little Pac-12, but I've been sticking to those main three, and I've been doing pretty well.
Has there been one team that's you feel like there's a lot of value so far in the college football season and moving on from here?
I think one team that a lot of if you listen to a lot of the experts, they want to fade every week. It's Stanford. I mean, Stanford is just that good. They're not excitingly good. They don't have that, you know, exciting Robert Griffin III or athlete type player, but they have Andrew Luck, who just dominates every game.
It's not, I guess he doesn't have a style you would describe as flashy, but he's just a very, I think people have used the phrase, he bores you to death with completions.
And I think Miami, Florida, they've kind of gotten past all their problems, and they've been a really, really good team. I think they've covered their last 3 weeks, and you know, they're laying 13 this week against a bad, I believe they're playing UVA.
Thursday night game, right?
I love it. I think they're a team that you might get another couple weeks of value on.
All right, so is that your college football pick of the week, Thursday night, Miami minus 13?
No, my college pick of the week is Stanford minus 7.
Oh, wow.
In the Coliseum against USC. USC, I don't know if it's because people, they're a public team or because they're coming off a big win at Notre Dame, but Stanford's a legit national championship contender, and USC is, you know, an above-average bowl team. I think Stanford comes in and just completely picks apart Lane Kiffin's poor rendition of the Tampa 2 defense. And I think it'll probably be a high-scoring game, but I think just Stanford's consistency at quarterback will be the difference.
So Stanford minus 7 against... So, yeah, I guess they're a 7-point road favorite. It's still a high number, but...
It's moved to 7.5 or maybe even 8. I still like it. I think Stanford wins this game big. I've watched USC play almost every week, and they've been inconsistent and sloppy at best. I think the Notre Dame game was probably their best game, and they definitely benefited from some good bounces. So,
all right, sounds good. Well, let's take a look here at the Week 7 NFL action. We're going to go over all the lines, all the bets, see where we won, see where we lost. All right, let's take a look at this game here, which ended up being a push in most cases. The Seattle Seahawks heading into Cleveland. Now, this is one of the crazier games of the week, and you think, oh my God, 6-3, Cleveland won, this is an ugly, boring game. Not if you had money on it, especially the way the game ended. I ended up buying the half point online, so I got it Seattle plus 3.5, and that was enough to eke out a gambling victory here. Ryan, take us through these last few drives and what it took for this to come out, a push and perhaps a win if you got it at 3.5.
Well, I think you start early, and you start with neither team looking very good. I would say through the first, you know, couple quarters, the best unit was probably the Seahawks defense. But out of nowhere, this horrendous roughing the passer penalty gets called against Seattle. Basically, Cam Chancellor, safety from Virginia Tech, comes on a blitz, hits Colt McCoy in the back kind of with his helmet. Looked like a fine tackle, a tackle you see a million times a game.
Yeah, it's one of the more atrocious. We've been complaining about it all year, but it was one of the more atrocious roughing the passer calls. And it was just because he put his face mask into the back of the guy's shoulder pads. I mean, there was so much of the face mask on the shoulder pads, it was ridiculous.
And it was really his lower back, too. It wasn't even close to his, like, it wasn't even that high on the back. It could have been mistaken for helmet to helmet.
It was insane.
Now, granted, we didn't have the sound on in the game, so we weren't really sure what happened. We thought he maybe threw him down after he was in the grass, but no, you watch the replay, awful call. Penalty ends up putting them in field goal range. They don't get any more yards. They kick a field goal. They go up 3-0. Seattle ends up driving back, get tying the game. It goes to halftime. I immediately pull up the second half line, see that Seattle's getting a half point. I like Seattle at +3. I really liked them at 3.5, so I put a little second half action. And I, same kind of game. And then another situation where the refs clearly were betting on Cleveland. Seattle takes a punt, returns it for a touchdown. Flags thrown, phantom holding call. Not quite as bad as the Bears holding call from earlier in the season, but phantom holding call, called back. Long story short, Cleveland goes up 3. It's a 6-3 game. Seattle has one last-ditch effort. They throw an interception, I believe. Cleveland has great field position with too much time left on the clock where they basically... They need, like, a couple first downs to run the clock out. They end up getting one, I believe.
No, I think this time they didn't get a first down. So they went essentially 3 and out, but they had to kick a field goal because they were within field goal range.
And Cleveland had enough timeouts to stop the clock. On 3rd down, the guy, yeah, that's what happened. It was, like, 3rd and 8 or 3rd and 5, whatever it was. He gets stopped. You're pissed because they're going to kick a close field goal. It's like a 30-something yard field goal. The clock was – there's enough time left in the game. And then out of nowhere, you see a flag, Seattle player, unnecessary roughness, 15-yard penalty, first down. Cleveland runs the game out. I think it was probably the first time I've ever celebrated a penalty against the team I was betting on to end
yes.
the game.
No, it was bizarre. But I think you forgot the other point. The drive before that, it was a similar situation in that they got the ball. They were in Seattle territory, Cleveland, and they were setting up for a field goal there to go up 9-3 and really kind of putting them behind. And they get a 37-yard field goal completely blocked.
Yeah, it was their second one that was blocked in the game, too. It was a strange game.
Someone on Vegas Insiders pointed out, or he just took a guess at what the odds would be of no one scoring a touchdown. And he had it at about like 127-1 that no one scores a touchdown in the game. I think it only happens, he said, a couple times a year. So, ugly game, but still exciting when it comes down to the spread. Now, this game was ugly in the fact that we had Detroit. We felt good about Detroit laying 3.5 at home against this Atlanta team, which I had not been high on all season, but I think maybe you have to start taking them for real now. This is a big win for them, 23-16. They do it in Ford Field in the Dome. Atlanta looked good here. I mean, I think it just seems like they just kind of hang around and they just get Tony Gonzalez involved a lot in the game. Detroit doesn't seem to have any running game with a Javad Best out, maybe makes them a little one-dimensional. Ryan, what do you think was Atlanta's key to their success here?
Yeah, I think it was more they kind of played almost like a Bears-style defense where they know that Detroit's game is kind of beating you with big plays, and they just forced Stafford to have to go underneath. And I saw a stat that in the past 2 weeks and their past 2 losses where teams have kind of played them that way and forced Stafford to take the underneath passes, his completion percentage has gone down a bit. And the other thing is, we kind of pointed out earlier in the season, but at some point, Detroit's lack of running game would probably bite them in the ass. And, you know, Atlanta's a tough team. They're a solid, fundamental team. I don't think this win really impressed me or made me think any different of them other than I thought Detroit really lost this game and played poorly.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like this Detroit team. I like Sue. But this could be kind of an unraveling point for the Detroit Lions. If they don't stop the bleeding next week, things could get ugly here, especially a young team that's just kind of turned it around. If you start sliding the other way, it can gain some momentum, and I think they might lose the season here if they don't stop the bleeding. Okay, now one game here where we had a couple of blowouts here this week. The Houston Texans whooped up on the Tennessee Titans 41-7, destroying the 3-point spread in Tennessee. You liked Houston here, Ryan. I admittedly like Tennessee getting +3. Explain what happened and how did Houston dominate so easily?
I think this was – I really liked Houston just because I think they're a solid team, and Tennessee has played a couple good games, but I just don't trust them. They don't have that running game. They had a good defense at one point. Clearly, they weren't stopping the run at all. And I guess it was mostly the Matt Hasselbeck can't do this all year.
Right.
And I don't know. Chris Johnson is not the same guy. Maybe it's the fact that he didn't have off season or training camp. Who knows?
You said you had a great quote about Chris Johnson.
So I was reading through the notes from the games last week, and I came across this quote. They were asking Chris Johnson if he felt he was the problem with the running game, and he angrily fired back, and I quote, "Basically, if you were watching the game and you really can't tell me what's going on with the run game, then I would say you really don't know football." He then went on to say, "I wouldn't say I'm the issue. I'm very confident I've been doing the things I do."
He'd do what he do.
That's crazy because he's looked horrible. I mean, he's never been a... He's a good running back, but his game was breaking big runs. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to
That's why I wasn't high on him even going into this year, because I had him last year on fantasy, and he was an awful player to have. Yeah, occasionally he would bust out an 80-yard run, but a lot of his runs were just kind of into the ground, and he wasn't doing much. He would get a yard here, a yard there, and occasionally he would get those big runs, but now he's not even getting those big runs.
And I think what really killed this Tennessee team is losing Kenny Britt was big. I mean, he was demanding a double team, and I think had he stayed healthy, Chris Johnson might be doing better. But now teams can just really pile up the box, and you know, force Matt Hasselbeck to try to beat him.
Yeah, I think that definitely hurts them, makes them one dimensional. Not looking good for Tennessee. Although they got the Colts next week, we'll get to that matchup.
I think
coming up.
That actually might have been my money line underdog pick.
Yes. And speaking of, you know, you hit your upset special and I hit my upset special.
Oh, here we go.
My upset special was the Denver Broncos going into Miami, rallying around my personal savior, Jesus Christ, and Tim Tebow. Denver eking out an 18-15 victory in possibly the worst, best game of the year so far. Ryan, take us through this game and what did you think was going to happen when the Dolphins were up 15-0?
I really didn't think this was going to – I mean, it involved two ridiculous
You'd
drives.
You'd almost say miraculous?
You really got to calm down that T-boner.
He's so fun to watch because he's so bad at throwing a football, which is what you need to be.
You could hear the producer of the game or the director, cut to him praying. Cut to him praying on one knee.
And yeah, that was great.
He did what he did a lot in college, and when it mattered, he drove him down. Now, I will say that this is probably the best thing that could have happened from a gambling perspective, because now this week they're somehow getting credit for being a good team when in reality they couldn't score against the worst defense in the league. I mean, that team, look, Tim Tebow had, Sterling Sharp was saying on NFL Network today, he had two drives against the worst defense in the league where his mechanics didn't matter, and they happened to win the game because that other team was so bad.
It is. He looks like a guy. I've seen wide receivers in this league consistently throw better than Tim Tebow. He looks as if he's. I think Jim Rome said it. He looks like an H-back throwing a pass on like a halfback option. He looks painfully uncomfortable throwing the football. That being said, Ryan, in the National Football League, it doesn't matter how you look. There's only one stat that matters. wins and losses.
And we really have to start evaluating him on his wins and losses. I mean, there were plays where he missed the receiver by 20 yards out of bounds.
It was so entertaining to watch because there was a lot of moments where the announcers desperately wanted to praise him for throwing the ball away, but it was unclear of whether he was throwing the ball out of bounds or trying to hit a wide open receiver.
Who was calling that game? It was like, was it Charles Scott? It was one of the. He was really trying to, like, being sympathizing and like, oh, that wasn't a horrible throw. That wasn't so bad. It's like, if that's any other quarterback.
And he has not gotten a lot of snaps this year. He's coming in. He's just barely knows this new John Fox offense. He is great for making.
What I got to ask is, what was the Miami defense doing in that two-point conversion? Obviously, that's the other thing. They're praising him for checking that play to not run left and run right away from the linebackers. It's like, come on, let's get serious. I mean, if Miami was a real defense, he's not scoring there.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as it's fun to, I don't know, I just love getting sucked into the Tebow hype because I've never seen this much hype for a guy who's this obviously bad at throwing the football.
It's almost like the Sanjaya movement in American Idol a couple years ago.
Vote for the worst. Hey, he's got fans because it's hilarious to root for a guy who doesn't. It feels like when I see him pass, it feels like, okay, that's probably how I would throw.
He's going to go to heaven and be hanging out with George W. a lot. It's like, man, we really fooled those people.
Exactly. Good times on. He is fun to kind of be behind. But yeah, but Miami. Awful team, and the Miami owner came down the field assuming they were going to win. Here's an interesting stat I found. I think it was from 1970. It was it was the first time since 1970 that a team had come back 15 points in the last 3 minutes. Obviously, instituting the two-point conversion rule in 94, that changed that stat a lot, but you got to give him credit, man.
Also, having God take the body of the kicker to make the most perfect onside kick.
Onside kick. And then their defense basically just stopped Miami, and then they just ran three run plays.
I mean, planned onside kicks, like when the defense knows you're running an onside kick, they're successful like 12% of the time. And then it wasn't Tebow.
It's almost like he defied all odds.
It was Matt Moore fumbling on his side of the field that really, it's crazy.
They recovered, in overtime, Denver recovered the fumble. They set up, and they didn't even want Tebow to get in the closer field goal range. They were just happy he was settling for a 53-yarder. The hilarious thing was some blog has like a snapshot after Tim Tebow had won the game. They have a snapshot of him praying, embracing his fellow players. And then they also have a snapshot of John Fox, and he just looks super pissed. Like, maybe there's something to this whole suck for luck campaign. Okay, now this game, another AFC West team, the San Diego Superchargers, went in to the East Coast here, new Meadowlands Stadium, where they took on the New York Jets. Back and forth game, Plaxico Burress. Three touchdowns. The Jets won 27-21. Really felt like the Chargers shot themselves in the foot, much like Plaxico Burress shot himself. Felt like they had this game, Ryan. Why do you think San Diego let this one slip away?
Because that's what San Diego does before November.
And
They lose. I mean, I don't know. This was you allow Mark Sanchez to score that many points against you. Defense has issues. Their offense hasn't looked good. There are a couple weird, deflection plays, like the Revis interception. But at the end of the day, they are up. They should have won. They blew the game. It's just what they do.
Did you see the press conference afterwards?
No.
Philip Rivers, he's up there like, yeah, it's no big deal. Yeah, we're 4-2. Well, I don't see what everyone's freaking out about. We've been in much worse situations. I mean, you should be frustrated as a player if you. This could have been a big win for them.
In his defense, I do like how he's able to forget a game 2 minutes after the game.
Right.
But in reality, I think they will be fine. I mean, typically at this point in the season, they're like 2-4. And
yeah, it's just funny to see a player actually say that of like, yeah, I think we're still going to make the playoffs. No one admits that, okay, this game wasn't that big in the grand scheme of things. You don't need that.
Yeah, I think this is another game that I'm not going to pay attention to when it comes to betting this week, just because it doesn't make me feel like the Jets are any better, and it doesn't make me feel like the Chargers are any worse.
I hear you. Okay, going into jolly old England, Wembley Stadium, where the Chicago Bears faced off against the Tampa Bay Bucks. The Bucks were laying a point, or no, I'm sorry, the Bucks were getting a point, according to this odd sheet. I felt like the Bucks had a chance, and they seemingly did. Chicago got up to a big lead early, let them hang around, and Josh Freeman, his fourth quarter heroics, were not there. I don't know what has happened to Josh Freeman that he wasn't able to pull this off. Ryan, what did you see in this game?
Yeah, I really like the Bears. We talked about it. I just don't think Josh – I think what you saw last year is everything that could have gone right for Josh Freeman went right. He won a lot. He won all of those close games, basically. And I think what you saw here is Chicago, I think they kind of went into a little bit of a prevent, and then they realized, oh, shit, we're letting them back in the game, and they kind of clamped down. Yeah, this game was in England. We really shouldn't talk that much about it. That was awful. We had to listen to God Bless the Queen and the National Anthem.
Yeah, that was really awful.
Or whatever, God Love the Queen, or whatever
and
the bullshit is.
All the Fox affiliates switch over so that we have to see this. Oh, England, they get to see real football. It's frustrating. Why are we trying to get England on board with... I understand the NFL wants to make more money, but are we really making that much more money?
Why not go to a country that might actually get into it? Like, England will always be a soccer country, and it's not even close. And I understand they don't really have a second major sport, curling maybe, or rugby. But why not? Let's focus on Mexico. They love the Cowboys and the 49ers. They love football. They'd get into that shit. I mean, go down to Mexico or South America, it seems like. Or even, let's go to Japan. Japan actually has, like, the most advanced, like, football infrastructure of any country outside of the United States. Or Canada. I mean, just let's, why not keep it real? Keep it within the countries that actually have football. Even France apparently has a pretty big football program.
Oh, man. Imagine those hard-hitting Frenchmen.
Oh, yeah. They... Such pussy. So, real quick, there was a football World Football Challenge a couple years ago. I think they might be doing it every year, but this was in 2008 or 2009. 8 teams all over the world. Somehow the U.S. wasn't the number one seed. It was all kids who had graduated high school going to college, and we absolutely murdered everyone. I mean, it was the finals was versus Canada, and I think they won 51-7. So. That's the state of football in the rest of the world. So
feels good. We're still on top.
Maybe we should stop trying to expand.
Maybe that...
Look what happened in basketball.
We're no longer an economic superpower, but we don't need it. We're a football superpower. Now, a team that I've enjoyed watching with the emergence of their rookie quarterback Cam Newton, the Carolina Panthers, played host to the Washington Redskins, laying 2.5 points, a favorite for the Carolina Panthers, and they covered. And they covered seemingly pretty easily, 33-20. You can't be that stoked about Beck here. He didn't look great in his first game. Obviously, on the road, you're going to run into some issues. Washington continues to pile on the injuries. Looks like Hightower's out for the season, even though he had a pretty solid game, 88 yards, I think, on 17 carries. And like you said before the show, that Washington has a good pass rush, but Cam Newton was seemingly able to neutralize it. Cam Newton also took a few shots. I mean, he had a couple plays where he was like diving up near the goal line, spinning around in the air. He's a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, it's not going to last very long, though. I thought the difference in this game was the Redskins got to him, and he made the miss, broke tackles. That was really the difference in the game. I mean, a couple times... It was like a 30-yard swing. It went from being a 10-yard sack to a 20-yard gain. I really think that if the Skins make some of those sacks, it's a different game. I'm still nervous about Carolina's defense. Although they looked better against, you know, a team without a great quarterback, I'm not too worried about Hightower being out going forward. Shanahan's proven he doesn't really care who's running the ball; they'll run the ball. I'm a little more concerned about Santana Moss. He's a big part of that offense.
Santana Moss is out. Cooley is out. Yeah, who's a great safety blanket, especially for someone coming in who he doesn't have a lot of experience in the offense.
I think Fred Davis is kind of you know, stepped into that role. I think Santana Moss is going to be a big deal, but I really think that I think the Skins' pass rush missing Cam Newton was the story of this game.
Now, the story in the Oakland Raiders game against the Kansas City Chiefs was interceptions, and there were a lot of them, six by the Oakland Raiders. Kansas City covering easily, 28-0 against the Oakland Raiders, and the Kansas City Chiefs were actually getting 4.5 points.
These are the great gambling games, because it's just you got the ka-ching going 10 minutes into the game.
You're hearing cash registers because you know the Kansas City Chiefs, they're up big, and the Oakland Raiders look awful.
This is a game I had to talk you into a little bit, but you finally drank the Kool-Aid, and
I was kind of hesitant. But then once I started to think about it a little bit more, I think really what won me over was Janikowski being out, because the Oakland Raiders definitely relied on him a lot.
He's worth 6 points a game, I think.
He really bails you out of some situations.
In a Vegas spread, he's probably worth a point to a point and a half, which is pretty crazy considering he's a kicker, but he allows them to try 55-yard field goals without thinking about it.
And in my defense, Kansas City didn't look... It's not that Kansas City looked that great. It was just more Oakland looked so bad.
I mean, Kansas City's offense tied the Kansas City's defense in points.
Exactly. So when you throw six interceptions, you're not going to win a game regardless. So I thought they'd be able to get a little bit better out of Kyle Bowler and what ended up being Carson Palmer, each of which threw three picks, two for touchdowns.
Kyle Bowler had a not again moment.
Poor Kyle Bowler. It's weird how you feel bad for these guys. And then you realize Kyle Bowler probably had an awesome life. He was a first-round pick, probably made tons of cash, probably hooked up with tons of chicks, and I'm here sitting on my couch making no money, doing whatever, and I'm feeling bad for Kyle Bowler. I don't know how that works.
At least you're making money off his demise.
Exactly. All I'm doing is making money off these sweet picks. And... man, nothing sweet about this Arizona Cardinals season. Kevin Cobb, the resurgent Kevin Cobb, or the hope in the desert, Kevin Cobb. Looks like he's flaming out here a bit. They got beat up pretty good here. Pittsburgh took him to the house 32-20, and it felt like it wasn't even that close. Pittsburgh just seemingly took care of this game, whereas they couldn't do that with Jacksonville. They were able to do it with Arizona. And I think a lot of it is just this Arizona defense is really bad, and the offense is not much better.
Yeah, I think the story here is that I think I've figured out Pittsburgh this year. And basically, Pittsburgh relies on a big play. That's why they're inconsistent. They were successful because Arizona's secondary is awful.
You get a couple big Mike Wallace plays. But that really shifts whether or not they cover and how much they win.
I think the second story is we're seeing that I don't think Pittsburgh's defense is very good this year. I think they've only had a couple takeaways. Giving up 20 points to Arizona, the old Pittsburgh defense wouldn't have done this.
They certainly seem like a flawed team, especially this early on in the season. Now, speaking of flaws, the St. Louis Rams could not hide a single one of their flaws. Took a step back, if that's somehow possible, getting destroyed by the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas 34-7, letting... DeMarco Murray, I don't know anyone who was really high on this DeMarco Murray going into this week. Maybe just a matchup of that he was going to get a lot of carries against a weak St. Louis defense. But he set a rushing record for Dallas way up there in the 250-yard range. And I don't know what to say here except just it felt like the Rams just looked that bad. And Dallas, I'll give it to Dallas, they look good, but... I don't think this St. Louis Rams team, especially at home, is much of a watermark.
No, and what I do like about this is people are like, oh, the Cowboys are back. It's like, no, they beat up the worst team in football at home. So,
and they looked okay against the Patriots on the road, but I'm still not a believer. They still feel, I don't know, they just don't feel like a 9-7 team to me. They don't feel like, they don't seem like they're going to be able to win a big game when it counts. I haven't seen that leadership from Tony Romo. I know we keep going back and forth on this guy, or at least that's the perception in the media, but I'm not sold on Tony Romo, and I don't think I ever will be.
It was basically a couple long runs were the game changer in this game. So, I don't know. This didn't really tell me anything about either team.
Yep, but we had Dallas in the Las Vegas Hilton contest. They blew out the Rams. another game that possibly seemed like it could have been a blowout, but Minnesota played the Green Bay Packers tough. They were actually up at halftime, but you could feel like Green Bay was eventually going to cut loose. This was a division game. 9 points seemed to be a little too high. We were sweating it out here at the end because we had bet Green Bay the second half. So the adjusted game line became Green Bay -4. Green Bay ended up winning by 6, but Minnesota had the ball. They had a chance to win at the end, which for Christian Ponder's first start, hard to ask for much more.
And we talked about this last week. We should keep track of these, too, but this was the close your eyes and take the Vikings game, or close your eyes and take the home dog getting a lot of points game this week. And
because they had underperformed the spread by more than 21 points, and that would have been a good play here.
And, yeah, you covered it, and really the cover was never really for about 5 minutes in the third quarter, you got nervous. But Minnesota, as it turns out, they have a good front four. And
especially at home, division game, we probably should have saw that this was going to be within 9 points. But what scared me was kind of the unknown of Christian Ponder.
And the Packers could score, which they got held to a lot of field goals here. That was the difference.
Yeah, exactly. And it could have easily, if they turn one of those field goals into a touchdown, they cover the spread. Now, a team that covered the spread by a staggering amount, the New Orleans Saints destroyed the Indianapolis Colts, getting out-coached, according to Jeff Saturday, the center, which it's time to turn in the season if the center is calling out the coach this early into the season before the halfway point. New Orleans just laying it on them. From the moment began, it was obvious that Indianapolis was just not in this game at all. Even at halftime, there was a thought of like, okay, Indianapolis just by process of elimination is going to get some good plays going. Couldn't pull it off. They didn't even have third downs. They weren't getting any sort of penalties. I hadn't seen an ass kicking like this on national television, I felt like, in a long time.
The weird thing is they actually looked good on that first drive, and then they had that snap fumble. And then they started looking good on the second drive, and the running back fumbled, and that was pretty much it. I mean, the story of this game is that Drew Brees had more touchdowns than incompletions, so
yeah, that's
we should
insane.
Probably move on.
Moving on, we will, to the Monday night game. Another upset? Yes, it was. The Jacksonville Jaguars beat the Baltimore Ravens 12-7. The Jacksonville Jaguars getting 8 points at home. Should have seen that was a little too high, so they covered that convincingly. It seemed like Jacksonville probably should have won by more. Maurice Jones-Drew, I think, had 3 or 4 fumbles.
Fumbled on the 1 yard line.
Yeah, neither team looked great. But Baltimore just seemingly didn't get up for this game and didn't show up on the road Monday night. I thought Monday night they would have shown up. I was kind of surprised.
So what I took away from this game was you really can't lay a lot of points with an offense that you don't trust on the road. And Joe Flacco in that offense is one that you just don't trust.
Yeah, if your completion percentage is that close to 50%, it's hard to take a more than touchdown spread. We really got to keep that in mind.
He's kind of turning into Alex Smith, the old Alex Smith, in that he just can't throw the ball down the field. I mean, he does. He's not scared to, but he's not good at it. And even when he does complete these bombs, they're like horribly thrown balls that Anquan Boldin or Torrey Smith has to make a great play to get. So I think going forward, I'm going to have to really think twice about taking this team laying points on the road.
Agreed, Ryan. So week 7, a little bit of tough here. So I figured, why don't we get a little inspiration here? I found this video's gone viral. It's a high school football coach firing up his team. So take a listen.
I will have it done my way, or your ass will be gone. You don't call the fucking shots around here. You think you're a man? Step up and be one. Don't try shit behind my back. Don't bring your damn friend from another school over here. I'll have his ass arrested for trespassing if I see him again. He's on another campus. It's illegal. Trust me. You don't want to be a dragon. You just want your buddies here. It's a bunch of mean people. That's all it is. That's what's fucking wrong with you. You don't give a shit. You don't want to look like the guy next to you. You want to do your damn thing. And you know I'm right. That's what's been our problem all damn year. It isn't age. It isn't injury. It isn't officials.
All right. I think that got us pretty fired up. The hilarious part of this is you hear it on the news, because it was obviously they bleeped it when it was on the news. This guy ended up having to resign, and they're interviewing him, and he's just so calm, just totally relaxed. Like, well, you know, sometimes you get a little out of hand. And what kind of world are we living in where these kids tape their coach going crazy and then post that up on YouTube? I can see why he's a little fired up.
Was their name the Dragons?
Yeah, which is really funny, too, because it's hard to yell at a kid like, you don't want to be Wizards? Like, it's such a goofy name to have. Some, you know, science fiction character that, you know, it's hard to take seriously. But it took me back to when I used to play high school football, right? I don't know if I've ever mentioned that. But coaches would just go off, and people take college football really seriously. And it was, kind of took me back. Made me feel, you know, reminisced about my own days playing high school football. All right, let's get to the week eight lines here, Ryan. Tennessee Titans at home, laying 8.5 points against the Colts. Now, this game is one of these games where both the... Okay, let's get to these Week 8 lines. Tennessee Titans laying 8.5 points against the Indianapolis Colts. Both of these teams underperforming the spread by more than 21 points on the previous week. Tough call here, Ryan. Do you go with the Titans, who are clearly struggling, getting destroyed by the Houston Texans, or do you go with the Colts, struggling much worse? One of these teams has to win the game, and will it be the Titans by 8.5? I think so. I just can't pick the Colts. I just can't do it. Maybe it's the right pick, but I feel like in two teams that are really bad, you got to take the home team. I don't feel like this Tennessee Titans team has given up yet, but this Indianapolis Colts team, I feel like, is not behind their coach anymore. They have no leaders, and there's no way I can pick them.
Team captain said they got out-coached. That they quit. They quit on the coach. It's over. I know Peyton's in the locker room, and he's gonna...
Oh, man, that was my favorite part of that Sunday night game, where they just kept cutting over to Peyton Manning.
There's no way. Peyton was sitting there the whole time, like, I could win. I could win this now, right now, but these guys suck. I'd highly recommend not betting on this game, as both teams have not looked great. Hard to take a team laying 8.5 when they haven't really shown much recently. But, and for that reason, I'm not going to take the Titans. I'll take the Colts.
Okay.
I'm arguing against what I just said. But I don't know how that Titans team could be favored by more than a touchdown against anyone right now. I don't know. It's a coin flip. Just stay away from it. Do yourself, bet the under, maybe.
There you go. That sounds like sound advice. Now the Jacksonville Jaguars going into Houston, getting 9.5 points. Feels like a little too high for the Jags. They're feisty. They show that they can hang with the big dogs. They played close against Pittsburgh. They played close against the Ravens. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Ravens, I think, are better than the Texans. Obviously, the transitive property doesn't apply to the NFL, but I like the Jags. I feel like they're going to play the Texans tough. And this Texans team does seem to seesaw back and forth, so I think they're going to let down a little bit after their big win.
Yeah, I don't trust the Texans to lay a big number. One thing to note in this game is that Andre Johnson, I saw, was jogging today. So I'm not sure if they're going to risk it and bring him back a week early. It would seem kind of stupid to bring him back against a team you should beat without him. But, yeah, I like the points here. I like the way the Jags defense is playing, and I like the way that they can run the ball. And hopefully Jones-Drew fixes those fumbling problems.
Okay, now the Carolina Panthers laying 3.5 points to the visiting Minnesota Vikings. Does Minnesota keep it close, Ryan? What do you think? Can they eke out a cover here with 3.5 points? Christian Ponder's second start. Two rookie quarterbacks going up head-to-head. Who do you feel is going to pull this out?
This game, I've gone back and forth on this. I saw that Adrian Peterson is actually not practicing with an ankle injury.
And oh, wow, that's huge.
I think that's the turning point for me, because although the Panthers defense has been awful, The Vikings offense hasn't been great. I think we now have a full game on Ponder. I think you're going to be able to confuse him a little bit. So I'm going to stick with Cam here. I think we're like a week away from them starting to respect the Panthers, and I think this line probably should be in that 4.5 to 5 point range. But so that's why I like the Panthers. One thing though, I will say is that the Vikings are probably one of the top defensive lines, and if anyone can keep him contained, they're right. probably it. But I think you saw what he did against the Redskins, who have a similar.
That's almost another reason why I'm taking the Panthers is that one of the Vikings' few strengths this year has been their defensive line play, and I think Cam Newton can neutralize a lot of that. Tough, so I like the Panthers.
Tough
here.
To take a rookie quarterback only getting 3.5 on the road here.
Now the New Orleans Saints coming off a huge victory. Just in sheer point spread, playing host to the St. Louis Rams. Oh, no, I'm sorry about that. The St. Louis Rams are hosting the New Orleans Saints, where the Rams, 13-point home dogs. Not looking good for Steve Spagnuolo here. Recently listened to an interview of Steve Spagnuolo. He sounds depressed, man. This Rams team does not look good. I don't think it matters who they're starting at quarterback. 13 points. Normally the Saints don't play well on the road, but this is a dome, and the Rams haven't covered a spread all year. I'm not going to take them until they cover once.
Yeah, I think this is an odd. It's strange they didn't open this bigger. It probably should be 2 touchdowns so that people have to think about it. At 13, it's you know, the Saints seem dialed in. That their defense is. I think the key to that team is that their defense is playing well now, and. Even if Sam Bradford's back, I just like you said, they haven't showed they can score points. Period. And to cover this spread, the Saints are going to score. I think conservatively, the Saints put up 28 points here. So you're basically saying, can the Rams get to 17? I don't think they can.
No way. Rams have been averaging 9 points a game.
Yeah.
Someone pointed out that in the World Series game, the St. Louis Cardinals outscored the Rams.
Well, the crazy thing here is that conventional wisdom would have it. I mean, the Saints are coming off a 50-point win. The Rams have looked horrible. Yeah. How do the odds makers not make this 14?
14 and a half, even.
To make you pause. I mean, it's not. And conventional wisdom says don't take the Saints here because they're laying extra juice than they have to be because of what the public just saw. But I don't think they adjusted enough, to be honest with you.
Yeah, now you got the I totally agree. I don't think it's adjusted enough here. Now the Baltimore Ravens, they're at home against the St. Louis Cardinals. Oh, Jesus. I just got confused there because of the St. Louis Rams going into the Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals.
It's understandable, Sean. You're a big baseball fan.
Exactly. Diehard baseball fan. Go Phillies, man. Tough year. Arizona Cardinals. But the Cardinals are getting 12.5, and I think that number's a little too high for this Ravens team. Obviously, you feel a little better at 13 points.
Yeah, I guess I feel like...
One thing this Cardinals team has been able to do is kind of score some points. Not look great. I think their defense is more the problem. I kind of see this game being 28-21, 28-17. It feels like one of these games where it's going to be obvious the Cardinals are going to lose for the majority of the game, but 12.5 is just a little too high.
So here's what I'll compare it to. I felt strongly about the Texans getting 8 versus the Ravens a couple weeks ago because I thought that I couldn't trust Joe Flacco enough. Now, I don't trust Joe Flacco, but I don't trust him on the road. I trust him more at home. I think this is a Ray Lewis gets the team hyped up game. And honestly, I
short don't, week, Ryan.
It is a short week.
But then you also got Arizona West to East Coast.
And you got Beanie Wells out, who has kind of been their player. I mean, the best player on the team. The one thing is, I don't know what the situation with the Ravens secondary is, but I just think Kevin Cobb's issues, you saw it against the Steelers, he rolls out too quickly. He gets rid of the ball too quickly. I really don't like this game. I probably won't bet real money on it, and I feel like kind of a sucker taking all these big favorites, but I'm going to take the Ravens.
Now another big favorite and another team full of suckers, the New York Football Giants. 10 o'clock West Coast kickoff against the Miami Dolphins in New York. Dolphins coming off an embarrassing loss, their first shot at a win. Couldn't pull it off against God's chosen one, Tim Tebow. But the Dolphins are getting 10 points here, taking their game up to New York. Feels like this Dolphins team is done. Any chance they cover the spread, Ryan?
I grabbed this as soon as it opened. It opened at 9.5. Settled in at 10. You're telling me, all right, A, Giants coming off a bye week. Now, I know that you can't practice as much during the bye week, all that jazz. The Dolphins just lost to Tim Tebow. The Dolphins have the worst defense in the league. The Dolphins are starting Matt Moore. The Giants will have Tuck, OC, and Pierre-Paul playing together for the first time. They're getting healthy.
As Reggie Bush pointed out, this team really stinks. That was his exact quote.
I think the one thing the Giants have had issues with this year is against big physical receivers. So Brandon Marshall could give them trouble. Maybe if Daniel Thomas busts through the front seven, the Giants have had problems giving up some longer runs. But I really don't see – the only way the Giants don't cover this is if Tom Coughlin goes into ultra-conservative mode when they're up 17 and the Dolphins score a garbage touchdown. So I'm going to take – I really like the Giants, not just because I'm a fan, but I think this, undeservedly, this spread is 10, and it probably should be closer to 13.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to take the Miami Dolphins. And it's all gut instinct. It just, the NFL can't be this simple. The NFL just can't be this simple.
The last time the Giants played a team at home, given laying 10,
they lost straight up. I don't like Eli covering big spreads. It's just not his game. The Giants don't blow out teams like this. I think it's going to be a little bit closer than it should, but I still like the Giants to win by 7. But I just have the feeling the Finns are going to cover. It's not going to be pretty, but I feel like there's got to be some pride on that Miami team. They're going to muster it up. I'm just picking it just because the Giants pick seems too easy, and I know how sports gambling is, and it's just not that easy. Buffalo Bills heading north to Toronto, Canada, where they're 6-point favorites against the Washington Redskins. I'm going to ride my Bills. Like the Bills, liked them all year. I'm going to ride them. Redskins are banged up. You got Cooley out. You got Santana Moss out. You got Hightower out. You got a couple guys from their offensive line out. I'm not sold on Beck. Heading up to Toronto. I don't think it's going to be a good game for the Redskins up there. Bills, I think their offense gets cooking a little bit. And I like them to cover the 6 points.
One thing to point out here, the last time the Bills played was against the Giants, right? Correct? And the Giants kind of laid down a blueprint on how to slow them down. I think the Redskins' defense is probably better than the Giants. And although I really, really don't like that Redskins offense, I'm gonna take the Redskins getting 6. I don't feel great about it. The game is in Toronto. I don't think it's gonna be that same.
Well, yeah, it's one of these games. They can't have these games outside the U.S. It throws off the one of the good things.
Well, to be fair, Toronto is like 50 miles from Buffalo, it's in a dome. So, but I think that you're not gonna have that same crazy Ralph Wilson Stadium atmosphere outside.
Right. I feel like that's a big part of the Bills' mojo. Like when they beat the Patriots, I felt like having that crowd behind them really helped. And maybe they lose some of that up in Toronto, but I still think the Bills are just, they got more talent right now, and they're a more confident team, so I'm going to take them laying 6. Now, this spread, when I saw this seems shockingly low. Obviously, you have Matt Stafford injured, but the Detroit Lions are going to Mile High, where they're facing off against the Denver Broncos. Broncos getting 1.5 points at home. The Broncos, I mean, yeah, Tebow eked out that win, but man.
So when
Detroit hasn't looked good, and Stafford seemingly in a boot. He's got some foot issues, but man, this.
You're telling me
you got that Detroit defensive line going up against Tim Tebow? I think Sue's gonna murder him.
I looked at the games and tried to like guess what the lines might be ahead of time, and this is one I thought they would make. I thought it would be between Broncos plus 3.5 and Broncos plus 5. So when I saw it come out at plus 1 and move to plus 1.5, I think it's actually moved all the way to 3, as it should have. So this seems like an easy one to me. Stafford practiced today. I think I think what you're seeing is I think Detroit just has to adapt. I think they're a better team. I think they have better athletes. And really, for me, this has nothing to do with Denver's defense or Detroit's offense. This is all about the fact that Tim Tebow couldn't lead them to a touchdown against Miami's defense in 57 minutes. I don't see how he leads them to any points against Detroit's defense.
No way. Detroit's defensive line is just going to murder Tim Tebow. I feel really strongly about this game.
I think if the Lions score 10 points, they cover this spread.
Yeah, I don't see the Broncos scoring more than 10 points. So, worst-case scenario, Lions have to put up 13 points against that Denver offense. I mean, that Denver defense, which seems pretty atrocious.
Detroit's defense will score a touchdown this week.
Great late AFC matchup. You got the New England Patriots heading into Pittsburgh to face off against the Steelers. Steelers getting 3 points at home. You don't see that very often, but like we discussed earlier, this Steelers team does not seem as dominant as previous, and that's why I'm going to take the New England Patriots here. New England Patriots are a sneaky good team this year. I don't know how they've been getting... Maybe they haven't been getting overlooked, but it just seems like the Patriots haven't been getting the press that they should for how dominant Tom Brady's played. Obviously, he's had a couple moments where he's a little more prone to interceptions than normal. But I really like this New England team. They seem to have the Steelers' number, at least in recent history. I think Steelers still have some injury issues. I'm going to take the Patriots laying 3 in Pittsburgh.
This is going to be a track meet, I think. I don't see how you start with Pittsburgh's offense versus New England's defense. You got to remember, Patriots coming off the bye. Belichick a little bit extra time to prepare. He's going to take away that one thing you do really well out of the game, and that one thing they do well is going deep. They're going to take Mike Wallace out of the game, and they're going to force Ben to be accurate underneath and try to run the ball. They haven't been great at running the ball this year, and I think that that's the equalizer. That's what they're going to miss out on. They're not going to hit on that big touchdown. On the other side of the ball, I think that, like we spoke about, the Steelers' defense hasn't been as good, and I think their weakness is linebackers in coverage, and Tom Brady is going to go to town passing to his big tight ends, Gronkowski and Hernandez. And I think I was a little shocked. I mean, this spread makes sense. That's what it has to be. You can't give more than 3 points to the Patriots here, but I think the Patriots win, and this feels like a 38-28 type game.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots win by 2 scores. And I'm not surprised if this next team wins by 2 scores either. The San Francisco 49ers laying 8.5 points against the Cleveland Browns. And I just don't see Cleveland keeping this close. They just don't have the offense to make it interesting. Obviously, Peyton Hillis is coming back. That's gonna help the Cleveland Browns out a little bit. But I think the 49ers are fired up. They're stoked. This is kind of a homecoming game for them after their big win in Detroit. Yeah, I think they're going to handle the Browns here.
I think this is the official passing of the torch from Ray Lewis to Patrick Willis in terms of most dominating middle linebacker. That defense is for real, and the Browns had trouble scoring against a Seahawks team at home. I don't see how they're going to put up a lot of points against the Niners. I think this is another game where I don't see the Browns scoring more than 6 or maybe 9, 10 points. Niners, I think the Niners put up 24 points. They easily cover this.
I think Ted Ginn's due for a big return. I think they're going to put up 21-24, and they keep the Browns 10 and under.
I mean, look what Harbaugh did at Stanford. He's a good coach. I mean, he's made some really bad in-game decisions in terms of trying to challenge something when you can't challenge it or not taking a penalty. But in terms of preparation and getting your players to play up to their talent level, he's doing everything that Mike Singletary didn't. And so I really like this game. I don't understand how this game is an 8.5-point spread and the Giants is a 10-point spread, or how the Ravens is 12.5 and this is 8.5. I think the talent disparity in this game is much more than in the Ravens game. So this should probably be somewhere between the 10-13-point range. So I'm definitely going to take the 49ers.
Yeah, that is. If you compare it to the rest of the big spreads, this one's kind of the smallest of the big spreads and seemingly the most obvious, like you said, as far as the talent disparity.
They scored 6 points against Seattle at home. I mean, that's
yeah, they got nothing on offense.
That's all I had.
You got Peyton Hillis, who might provide some smart.
He's shown that he's a bitch, though. I mean,
he seems like he's running soft this year. He claims he's not going to complain about his contract anymore. Who knows? All right, so the Seattle Seahawks and their 12th man are welcoming in the Cincinnati Bengals, where the Seahawks are 2.5-point underdogs at home. I'm going to take the Seattle Seahawks. Reason being, I think you got two young teams here. You got to take the home team here. I think the Cincinnati Bengals, I think they're going to get exposed here a little bit. They're a young team. This seems like a game. You're going to the West Coast, playing in Seattle. Seattle seems to do well if you give them points at home, and I'm not going to pick against them here.
I would have loved this to be 3 points, but yeah, you're talking about a really loud stadium. You're talking about a team that's playing hard for Pete Carroll versus a team that has been playing hard themselves, but Andy Dalton's going to really, you know, he's going to get introduced to real noise. And Cedric Benson's out, who, you know, hasn't been having the greatest year running the ball in terms of averages, but he's a really solid blocker, and I think he does a lot for that team in terms of picking up the blitz for the rookie. So I think what you're going to see is, I think even though Bernard Scott might be a little more athletic and exciting, I think they're going to miss him in the passing game. And I think the Seahawks cornerbacks have actually been pretty good against big physical receivers. And I think
is Tavares going to play?
I'm not sure if Tavares is going to play, but I like Charlie Whitehurst in a bounce back game. I thought he looked good against the Giants, and then kind of strangely looked awful against the Browns. Didn't really understand, but I like them to bounce back, and with or without Marshawn Lynch, I like them getting points at home in that loud stadium against a rookie.
Now the big Sunday night NFC East matchup, the Philadelphia Eagles welcoming in America's team, the Dallas Cowboys, where the Cowboys are getting 3.5 points. Seems like this should be a 3-point spread. Maybe it will be on the offshore places. Right now, the Hilton has it at 3.5. Man, this is a tough game to call. They seem like two similar teams.
I'll tell you why it's not tough, Sean.
Sure.
This shouldn't be a 3.5-point spread at all. It should be a 4, 5, 5.5-point spread. We're overreacting a little bit to the last two Cowboys games. They played a Patriots team tight. I'll give them that. Their defense looked good. Their defense has looked good. They got a couple bounces in that Patriot game, but I'll tell you what hasn't looked good. Their offense, and I don't care. You want to talk about DeMarco Murray, and he had this big game. He had some big runs, but I think we're overreacting. I think the Eagles coming off a bye, Andy Reid, one of the better game planners there is. And at the end of the day, I'm not taking the Cowboys. I mean, the Eagles are due. The Eagles are a solid team. They have to come back here and play strong. I could be horribly wrong, and, you know, who knows? I can't really root for either one of these teams, but I really think the Eagles are going to – this is going to be one of those games where Deshaun pops a couple deep ones. And, you know, really, the Cowboys haven't shown that they can run the ball. They had one game against the worst defense against the run in the league. And – I think the Eagles will slow down the run game, or the non-existent run game, and you know, they have the cornerbacks to shut down the explosive receivers. So I think the Eagles will win this. I think this is probably a game they win by 10 points.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better about the game, Ryan. I appreciate your prognostication. I'm a little bit of a pessimist that maybe that half point scares me by the Cowboys. I could definitely see the Eagles losing this game, but I'm going to still take them. It's hard not to make this an emotional pick. I'll give you a couple good reasons why the Eagles should win this game that you might not have touched on. Tony Romo has not had a great history of playing in Philadelphia. I think they've just in general in the Andy Reid era, they've had good games against Tony Romo. Plenty of time to strategize, plenty of time to figure out some blitz packages that'll hopefully confuse him. And the Eagles are still desperate. They're still 2-4. They really need this game, where I feel like the Cowboys, not the same quite sense of desperation on that team.
One matchup I hate from the Eagles' perspective is they have no one that can guard Jason Witten. But I think because they have the stellar cornerbacks, they should be able to double Witten. This just feels like a game that Samuel baits Tony Romo into throwing a pick six. It's just,
and as much as a problem the Eagles were having with their offensive line looked pretty solid against the the Redskins defensive line, who I think is pretty good. They got Harriman's back in there. Trent Cole is healthy. That's a big thing for the Eagles, getting Trent Cole healthy. I think Trent Cole makes a couple big plays on Tony Romo. Their D-line really needs him in there. So I'm optimistic that they can work something out, or at least I'm trying to convince myself. Now, an AFC West matchup is our last game. We got the Monday night matchup of the San Diego Superchargers going into Kansas City, where the Chiefs are 3.5-point dogs at Arrowhead. Chiefs seemingly turning their season around 3-3, and I like the Chiefs getting 3.5. They've always seemed to have San Diego's number. They actually played San Diego close in San Diego. I think they're going to keep that momentum going. I still think the Chargers don't. There's not a sense of urgency on this Chargers team. I like the Chiefs at home Monday night in Arrowhead.
I think the thing we didn't take out of the game against the Jets is that they, for three quarters, they moved the ball and scored some points against a very good Jets defense. And when I saw this game, I thought the Chiefs would be getting 4.5 to 5.5 points. And I have a real hard time taking a team that doesn't have a great running back and their quarterback's Matt Castle. I'm going to roll with the Chargers here against my instincts, because instincts
say it's an emotional pick.
Take the Chiefs at home getting 3.5, because most times when you take a home dog, when they're getting 3.5, it just feels like that's the side you should always take. But yeah. I think the Chargers played three quarters of good football, and the Chiefs really, although they won in a blowout, they didn't look great on offense. And you know, they look pretty solid on defense, but one thing about their cornerbacks is they're smaller, and they don't match up well against the Chargers' big receivers and Gates, Jackson, and Floyd. So I think I'm going to take the Chargers here in a game where I think the Chargers go up early and take the crowd out of it.
All right, that sounds like a blueprint for the San Diego Superchargers to win. All right, man, let's do it. Let's give me your lock of the week and your upset special.
I don't feel great about many of these games, but the lock is definitely the 49ers. It seems a trap because it seems so easy, but I just don't feel like there's any way the Browns can cover this 8.5-point spread. I would love it just as much if it was 10 points. So, yeah, I love this spread. I think the 49ers win by 17 points.
Wow! All right. And upset special, what do you got for me, Ryan?
So the easy one here is you take the Seahawks money line, but plus 115, plus 120. That's not fun. So, and being that I like all favorites this week, and I don't really trust that the Colts or Jags can actually win, I'm going to go with the Redskins money line.
Okay.
Like I said, I think the Giants laid a little bit of a blueprint out there. The Giants defense hasn't been as good as the Redskins, and I think what you're going to see is, you're going to see that the Bills' offensive line not that great. The Redskins are going to get to the quarterback, and I think they're going to cause some havoc. And I think John Beck plays a very conservative game, hands the ball off. I think Torrain rushes for 100 yards. Helu has a couple nice screen passes, and I think the Redskins win this in a 21-17, maybe 24-21 type game.
All right. I like those two there. Okay, the Detroit Lions, I think, -1.5 in Denver.
Oh, I like that game.
That is my lock of the week. I feel really strongly about that game. And as far as my upset special, you know, you said you didn't think the Jags could pull it out. I like the Jags, man. I like the Jags getting 9.5 points, but I think there's an outside shot they beat the Texans straight up. I have no confidence in this Houston Texans team. They seem to be all over the map. I could definitely see them having a letdown after their big win. I'm going to take the Jags as my upset special.
It's pretty impressive how Jack Del Rio continuously sucks and makes horrible decisions as a coach, cutting players and cutting quarterbacks the week before the season, but he doesn't lose the team. It's pretty impressive. Like, it's impressive that he has the backing of the ownership and the team.
They beat Baltimore with Maurice Jones-Drew. How many times did he fumble? Four?
He fumbled three times.
Three times.
One time was on the 1 yard line going in. And it was, and with pretty much with them telling Blaine Gabbert, you know, don't even bother trying to throw the ball near Ed Reed. So, I thought the big story of that game was how much that defense came to play, and I really like the way their secondary is playing. I think they already could stop the run, and I think the secondary is starting to play. They have two quality safeties. I think, like I said, the big X factor here is if Andre Johnson plays.
Right.
But I think for sure, I think they can bottle up.
It just feels a little juicy here. Of these big
and
spread
and look,
upsets.
That's a plus 350 right there, plus 320. I think you can definitely – I think they limit Arian Foster to under 80 yards, and I think that's the story. And if Andre Johnson doesn't play especially, I really like that money line.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Sports Gambling Podcast. Make sure you check us out at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Ryan, where can people check you out? Throw out your Twitter feed there.
Screw the Twitter feed. They can check me out. I'll be watching games this weekend at the Harrah's Sportsbook in Vegas. I'll be the guy wearing the red Eli Manning jersey. You can come say what's up.
Wait, you're going to Harrah's again? Harrah's sucks.
I think
man.
We're
going to
go. It wasn't that bad. We just lost money. We're either going to be Harrah's. We might go to the Plaza. We'll see.
Okay. So you'll be there. You'll be the guy in the red Eli Manning jersey laying a lot of bets. Any other big plans for your Vegas weekend?
No, not you know there's the UFC fight Saturday night. We got a table over at the Gulagasi Stadium.
All right, give me a pick there for the UFC. Who do you like?
So the main event has been totally mutilated from Nick Diaz versus GSP to Nick Diaz doesn't show up to a press conference, so he gets demoted. They put in this Condit character. Now GSP is saying that he ripped his knee up or something. So Condit's the real loser. He doesn't get to fight at all. So now the main event is BJ Penn versus Nick Diaz. And
wait, so Nick Diaz is back in?
That's where they moved him. Yeah, but by virtue of GSP getting hurt, they put him back in the main event. So GSP or Nick Diaz and BJ Penn, which actually could turn out to be a more exciting fight than the previous main event.
But who has the belt? GSP?
GSP. But Nick Diaz basically said, "Hey man, the people were looking for a 5-round title fight. Let's go 5 rounds." And Dana basically said, "If BJ is cool with it, we'll go 5 rounds." So
they're doing 5 rounds.
And it should, in terms of MMA fights, it should be an exciting one. They both are they're two of the best boxers in MMA. They both are very 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 good on their back too. So I don't see either one trying to take the other one down. And honestly, I'm gonna go. I don't see how I don't bet on Nick Diaz here. Hopefully he's a slight underdog, but I think I like Nick Diaz in this fight.
Okay, so you're betting on the pothead in the MMA title.
Yeah, I'll go third. Especially if it goes long, because you know BJ Penn's never in shape. So I'm going to go fourth round knock. If it's going 5 rounds, the fourth round knockout. If not, 3 rounds. 3-round knockout.
Sounds good. So check Ryan out in person in Las Vegas. Go up to him, tell him you're a fan of the Sports Gambling Podcast. And you can check me out at SeanTGreen.com. Got the comedy podcast over there. You can follow me on Twitter @GreenRoomShow. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and let it ride.